F4.
Number 15A.
So we take up that first subject in B from the standpoint of love, the Christ as the Word, in order to see the universality of that Christ. And we have here that well-known incidence of Jesus feeding the multitude. And it's again a story that has puzzled people always, and that's all right. And we see what we can find in it that gives us a scientific and Christian interpretation. And when we find that, we are perhaps overwhelmed by the magnitude of this incident. The story you know very well, that Jesus went up over up to the mountain. He came from over the Sea of Galilee, and a great multitude followed him because of the miracles or the signs which he did. And so he went up first into a mountain. Always the very first thing is to lift thought out of the earthly thinking up to the highest altitude we can take in spiritually. We go up the mountain, into a mountain. So again, we have a sense of life lifting our thought to the point of where we are free from all downward tendencies. And there, when they were on that mountain with all that multitude of people, Jesus said to Philip, "Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat?" Now we come to the bread. We had the water that is left behind. Then we came to the meat. Now the meat was bread. And for a long time, bread is the central symbol for truth. And so he said that to Philip, "How shall we feed all these people?" And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. So Jesus knew exactly what he's going to do and what he's going to demonstrate, but he didn't reveal it at first, but he wondered how the disciples would handle such a situation. So he said to Philip, "Now, how would you handle that situation?" In order to see where his consciousness was. And Philip naturally still had a material consciousness. Material consciousness, the moment you have matter, you have the two, you have duality. And so he was playing with the two, with the material calculus, and says, "Well, I have only 200 penny worth of bread, and this is not enough." So he had the two stands for duality, for a material sense of things, and bread for the truth. So he had a material sense of the Christ truth. He reckoned materially. He said, "Oh, golly, here are 5,000 people sitting around. How am we going to feed them materially?" And so he said, "Well, it is not sufficient to feed such a great number." Then came along Andrew, another disciple. And that other disciple said, "Well, there is a lad here which has 5 barley loaves. So he had already 5, and he had 2 small fishes. But what is that among so many?" So he could see that also Andrew reckoned materially. He saw that he saw also, but only limitation. What is this among so many? And that Jesus did in order to see that the disciples have not yet grasped the divine infinite calculus. They were still in the material calculus, just as we are still in the material calculus, calculating, do we have enough money, do we have enough supply, is it enough for our life, if it's enough for our future. We still calculate as Philip and Andrew would do. And so we have to learn that lesson also that Jesus wanted to give to the disciples. The lesson he wanted to give them is the following. The very first thing that Jesus did, because he knew all things, he knew how to handle the situation, he said first to the men, sit down. With sit down, he meant get at ease in your mentality. Don't worry about limitations, about material limitations, about supply. Don't worry. Sit down. Rest your thought. And he said that they should sit down because there was much grass in the place. That's so important that John would have to say where they were sitting down, that there was much grass there. Yes, that's important, because grass was always in the symbolism of that time, was really a place for much thinking. Grass, where the tender thinking was, the tenderness, the budding thought. It was a lad anyway who was proposing the solution. And so Jesus could see, I first have to let the thought rest and let they be thinking. Let them think and think and think. It is similar to that occasion that he said, fill first the 6 water pots with water, and only then it runs over before there is no abundance. So fill your thought. And so he said, sit down first and be still within you. And think about all the best things you can think. That's the grass on which you rest. But then he gave his answer. It was said then that Jesus took the loaves and gave thanks. So he took the loaves, those few, and gave thanks, and distributed to the disciples, and the disciples then distributed it to the men. It's a nice story, but when one knows the symbolism of it, it's a terrific story. It's a great treatment, scientific treatment, for seeing that there is abundance in being. How did he manage that? You see, so first of all, he gave thanks in the order of things. He gave thanks. Well, we know that gratitude is what Mrs. Eddy calls gratitude for life, truth, and love. That if we are grateful for the things already received, that's all right, that's nice, and makes us ready to receive more, she says. And then in the next paragraph in the textbook, she says, but if you are ungrateful for life, truth, and love, then, and yet return thanks to God for all blessings, we are insincere and incur the sharp censure that our master pronounces on hypocrites. So he could see that giving thanks without knowing from where those thanks must come, that it is that the source of what we have got must be life, truth, and love. And if we don't acknowledge that, we don't acknowledge the source of supply. So Jesus, in his consciousness, first gave thanks. He just first established in his consciousness the word of God, of life, truth, and love, and gave thanks that life exists, that life is infinite, that life is the source of all supply, of infinite provision, of infinite support and maintenance. So he established first that universal sense of the superabundance of life, and then could see that that is the truth about the situation. Not the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes are the truth about the situation. The one Christ truth is the truth about the situation. And he could see love and gave thanks to love, because he knew that love would meet every human need, that he can't do anything else but to be love and do that. So he established in his conscience first the universal sense of life, truth, and love, so that we have no restriction in our consciousness, no limitation in our consciousness. Then he took the bread. You remember that the bread was in the former chapters defined really as that Christ's bread, as truth, life, and love. So he could see that that life, truth, and love, that gratitude within himself had a Christ, that was the bread of life, namely truth, life, and love. I came to do the will of the Father, and I finish it. That was his meat. You know, he said to the disciples, I have another meat to eat than what you bring me from the shop. My meat is quite different. And here it is, the bread of truth, that he could see that was the activity in the universe of the one Christ that is infinitely individualized, life, infinitely individualized, so that in that universe every individual situation will be touched by that truth. That one Christ is the Christ to every situation. So he didn't need to be bothered about 5,000 people, because he knew the infinite truth is infinitely individualized in life and adapted to the situation, love. So this was the consciousness which he entertained in his consciousness, namely first the Word in Absolute Christian Science, namely life, truth, and love, then the Christ, because he had to demonstrate the universal Christ, namely the Christ in Absolute Christian Science, that was truth, life, and love. And when he had given that thanks, he took the bread of life, and then he handed it down. He handed it down to the disciples, the disciples to the others, and the others to the others, and to the others. He handed it down right through the whole hierarchy of the spiritual structure of being. He could see that high altitude of consciousness would filter down through every category of being, right down to every individual place, to every one of those 5,000. And even more, because a lot of us left over afterwards. If it seems perhaps theoretical or academical at the moment, well, all right, that's fine for me. But I assure you that if you begin to work that way in your life, not just one evening and then it's over, but just entertain that sense, you will see that it works. You will see that it actually does multiply. See, you begin to see how it multiplies. What is multiplication? Multiplication is that from the one top category or roof category, it filters down through every level of the categories, right down to the last experience in human life. Because there is nothing outside those categories. So with those categories, going along those categories, I can't do it because it takes too much time. If I would do it, perhaps I do it next year. It filters down. You just think along those wonderful categories of being. The categories of the four, the categories of the seven, the categories of the numerals, the categories of the four sides of the city. And you see that it spreads out and spreads out until it fills, so to say, the whole model of being, the one being. You try it out, and you will see that it is multiplication, that it is superabundance of being. Mrs. Eddy once used to say, it is in Collectania, that she said to a student, why do you always stay in addition? That's what we do. We always stay in addition. I'm going to demonstrate this little bit, and then afterwards this little bit, and then afterwards I'm going to demonstrate this, and that, and the other. That's addition. And she said, why do you always stay in addition? Why don't you come out of addition and go to multiplication? That's what Jesus did at this moment. Those two disciples had a sense of addition, and they added up the loaves and could see that couldn't fill the 5,000. They were in the level of addition. Jesus was thinking in the realm of multiplication. How can we multiply? We can only multiply by seeing the one consciousness in every category of being. Then we multiply. And so you will get, as you do that, you will get into a very wonderful habit, or let's say into a wonderful attitude. Namely, that it becomes foreign to you to try to make little individual demonstrations. Little by little, that lifts you out to that point where you say, I always take in the whole, at nothing less than the whole. If I take the whole, I include all the little bits. All the little things are included in the whole, you see? Like young soul trying to find his little asses and going around in the whole country and trying to find the asses and didn't find it. What was the answer? The servant said to him, go to up on the hill, there is a prophet. He goes, just as Jesus went up on the top of the mountain. And on the top of that mountain was the prophet. And he said to little soul, you're a silly old chap, you know. Can't you see that you are the king of Judah, of Israel? And I make you king of Israel. And then you have the kingdom of Israel, you have everything in it. Not only your little asses that you are looking for. You have everything. Then your asses are found. That's what is the consciousness that we should entertain. And that's what is showing here. That's how we break the limitation of matter. Matter is always limitation. If you calculate in a material calculus, we always calculate materially, and that's limited, and so we have to stay in addition. And have to add and add and add and add and heap up and heap up and heap up and heap up. And that hill never really grows too big. Whereas if you take right from the beginning the whole, and that's the standpoint of John, you take the whole, everything is included in it. And so that was his teaching. And it's, not only is included in it what we need, there were still a lot of bread over, fragments were left over. 12 baskets full of fragments were left over. The whole demonstration is so big that it not only touches the situation that is under consideration, but that it is really touching more than that. It's not only abundance, it's superabundance. It even takes in the fragments. So that was impressing for the people, and naturally the people said, this is of a truth, that prophet that should come into the world. So they wanted to make him a king again. And Jesus departed. See, he didn't believe in people. So he departed again into a mountain himself alone. People always complain that they are alone. They should be happy if they are left alone. I wish I could be left alone. Even if it only would be for a year. That would be my greatest desire, to be left absolutely alone. Then one is in good company. Yes. So, this was tearing down the belief of material limitation. And you do that through those two things. First, to see gratitude for what is already at hand. In prayer, you know that gratitude is shown, and it is in that chapter where it says that we receive already more than what we, or that God gives us already more than what we can receive. That's the tone that pervades already the beginning of the chapter on prayer. So if we start out with that terrific sense that being is of the nature of life, truth, and love, and see that that is the bread of life, that is the loaves that we're working with, and that bread of life, that meat which we eat, is the truth, life, and love. That one truth, that is the truth for everything, for every individual situation, life, and is absolutely adapted to the situation, love. If we entertain that consciousness, then we experience really this abundance of being. You experience certainly something, namely that you are not confronted with a lot of little problems. That's the very first thing you encounter. I'm always amazed how much people have problems. How many problems they have? They make a lot of problems. They don't have them. They make them. They make seems to make out of every situation a problem. When you have this attitude here, you feel no, you don't have really a lot of little problems. You have one problem. That's the whole. That's my problem. To get into my consciousness, the whole of it. That's the only positive problem that we entertain. And that is the problem that is working so that the little negative problems don't pop up. They don't pop up. You can be quite sure. But as long as we are interested in little ants and in little fleas and flies and so on, and let the big camels and elephants go by, then naturally we are very busy. I just like to take one big thing, so don't swallow nuts, but swallow a camel. Yeah, so that's consciousness, as I said, with little soul, has already been in the Old Testament too. We come to the next experience, Jesus walking on the sea. Now, this seems to be a completely different situation than the feeding of the multitude, but when we look behind the symbols, we find again the universality of the calculus of spirit, but not the material calculus. Because matter seems to have limits, seems to have to do with space and time. It's so that space and time and energy has to be handled also. And the next experience, Jesus shows how to handle space and time and energy. He handled all three. The story goes on that the disciples then, when they were fed and the multitude was fed, that they went home over the sea and wanted to go to the other side of the sea. And so they entered the ship towards Capernaum, and it was now dark. Ho, ho, ho. Again it was dark. They lost the vision at once. It doesn't take long until one loses the vision. So it was dark. And Jesus was not with them. He was on the mountain. He was in the light. And the sea arose. Well, when it's dark, then all the problems come up. And the storm gets going. And a great wind blew. And so they were in danger. And so in that danger, when the wind blew, Jesus came along walking on the sea. So he was walking on the sea. He demonstrated that gravitation, the law of gravitation, the energy in gravitation, he could overcome because spirit has no gravitation, has no material gravitation. So that actually the true gravitation which Jesus had was that he constantly gravitated towards the Father. That was his gravitation. He was constantly attracted towards the Father. That's why you have in that wonderful sixth chapter the explanation that all these powers that are attraction and cohesion and adhesion and so on are really the power of the divine mind. But they can be misunderstood if we think that we gravitate downward, earthward, materialward. Jesus always gravitated heavenlyward, and so he could overcome the law of gravitation. So Jesus came along, and he did not fight the storm, like Matthew and Mark was telling, that they were fighting against the storm. Here you see Jesus always above every situation. He was always the master of every situation. He never struggled with the situation. He rose above the situation. You see, he really had the Gabriel attitude, not the Michael attitude, though both are necessary. Just as the synoptics are necessary, they are not unnecessary when we come to John. John just shows towards which the synoptics tend, so that we can crown the synoptics with the Gospel of John. But the others are just as important, because in the city four square it says that every side of the city was of equal length. They were equal. Not one had a preponderance. Only as we grow, we feel we grow higher and higher. Naturally, as we grow higher and higher, we see a higher vision. So here he was not fighting against, because when we go out from principle, we never encounter an opposite. That was the starting point from the first hour of this week. That there is never anything outside, there is never any opposite. If you go out from principle. If you do not go out from principle, if you go out from the phenomena, we always encounter opposites, we always encounter opposition, we always encounter enemies and hostility. So, while they were afraid, Jesus said, when they saw him coming, "It is I, be not afraid." See? It is I. For the first time he uses that definition, it is I, the I am. The I am can never be afraid, because the I am is only the I am that I am. And that includes no opposite, no error. So we don't need to be afraid.